And welcome to a Juno Afternoon. My name is Jamie Waste. Today we're going to be learning about a fundraiser to provide a service dog for a local resident. Pat Race will be in the studio highlighting an upcoming downtown cleanup event and the Downtown Improvement Group. We're going to learn about The Sneeze, a collaboration between Perseverance Theater and UAS. Rick Caulfield will be here with a preview of his talk before the Juno World Affairs Council this evening about Greenland. And we're going to hear the details about the upcoming Juno Lyric Opera Gala. The Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music & More, today at 3 on KTOO News Juno. And if you missed the show live at 3, it's also available at 4.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Keystone XL pipeline hearings before the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission will go forward as scheduled in May. Pipeline opponents this week asked for a delay of the hearings until after a presidential permit is granted or denied, but commissioners say they have an obligation to give TransCanada a timely hearing in South Dakota. Victoria Wicks has this report.
Pipeline opponents say the U.S. government does not yet have all the information it needs to issue a federal permit. The route is not yet settled in Nebraska, and the Canadian National Energy Board is conducting an investigation into TransCanada's safety record. Robin Martinez is an attorney for Dakota Rural Action.
With that degree of uncertainty that is out there, these proceedings are a huge waste of everybody's time, energy, and effort.
Martinez asked the PUC to delay the May hearings for the sake of judicial economy.
Not only for the interveners, the money that we've had to spend getting expert witnesses, the money that we're going to have to spend to get a lot of people in town next month for these hearings, but for TransCanada as well, and for you as members of the commission.
Opponents, including the Indigenous Environmental Network and Rosebud, Standing Rock, and Cheyenne River Sioux tribes, say the South Dakota process has been scheduled at a pace that doesn't allow them to fully develop the record and put together sufficient evidence. But TransCanada lawyer James Moore says South Dakota issued a permit 4 years ago, even though the federal process was ongoing.
This process has taken a great deal of time. This permit was granted 4 years ago. This docket started in September. It's on track to be concluded in about a year. That is not a hasty proceeding. That is a thoughtful, deliberate, considerate proceeding.
Moore says the PUC can consider the Canadian allegations for itself rather than waiting for that investigation to play out. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
The Tulalip tribes of Washington are relocating beaver families. Chris Thomas with Washington News Service explains.
The critters have become a nuisance in the lowlands, but in higher elevations, their hard work can benefit the entire Snohomish watershed. Ben Dittbrenner is a UW graduate student working with the tribes to trap and move beavers and study the effects of their dam building. When less snow is predicted with a changing climate, he says a beaver dam is just the right type of eco-friendly barrier to moderate spring runoff.
It will just flow right down to the Puget Sound, and it won't stay in the system for more than a couple days. But if we can trap it high up in the watershed, we can keep it there for months, continue to keep those systems healthier for a longer period of time.
This will be the second year for the project. Dittbrenner says one family's big dam in the pond that is their new home has raised the water level by 4 feet. Jason Schilling, the tribe's wildlife biologist, says beaver dams are engineering marvels, holding back sediment and creating more complex stream systems and good habitat for fish feeding and spawning. In this part of Washington, he says that's especially important.
The Snohomish ecosystem is the second largest salmon producing system in Puget Sound, and there are some limiting factors for salmon production. The biggest ones are water temperature and sedimentation. Beavers are very good at fixing those problems.
Relocation starts again in June. The goal is to trap and move at least 10 families. Schilling explains beavers tend to stick together as family units and are more likely to settle into an area and get to work if they arrive together. The project is one of 22 conservation projects across the country among 13 Native American tribes.
That was Chris Thomas reporting, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com. Support by NativeGiving.org, empowering Native children and families through community giving.
All the donations made on NativeGiving.org go toward the organization you choose.
Information on successful innovations at NativeGiving.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to a Juneau Afternoon. Our first guest today in the studio, we have Kim and Norm Haskell, and they're here to talk about a special fundraising event, a spaghetti feed that's coming up this weekend with a special purpose, and that's to raise funds for a service dog, and that service dog is for you, Kim, correct?
That's correct.
So why don't you tell us about the event, and then we'll talk a little bit about service dogs.
Okay, on Saturday evening, we are going to be having a spaghetti dinner and silent auction fundraiser. It's being held at the Moose Lodge, which is on Airport Boulevard, and the event is from 5 to 7. The purpose of the event is to raise money, like you said, for a service dog. I have some mobility issues, and the dog is being trained for mobility, balance, and retrieval. At the event, we are going to be having an all-you-can-eat spaghetti dinner, a silent auction, we have a 50-50 raffle, and we have some entertainment from local musicians that will be playing for the evening.
Mm-hmm.
The tickets are $10 in advance, which can be purchased at Hearthside Books or also by contacting myself or my husband, Norm, who's also here. You can also purchase them at the door at the Moose Lodge. One of the questions we've been asked a lot is, do I have to be a member of the Moose Lodge? Absolutely not. We're, you know, the entire community is invited. Let's see. The community's provided a lot of different items for the silent auction. We have everything from tattoo certificates to tabletop fire pits, jewelry, different certificates for dining out, tools, kind of a little bit of for everybody.
Mm-hmm. So a service dog, is this something you've thought about for a long time and are just now getting around to? Or is this, I mean, give us a bit of the story
sure.
and the context here.
I've gone back and forth on it for a while before making the final decision. It's a big commitment and a large investment into the dog. But after talking to multiple people that have had service dogs and talking to my doctor, we decided that it was a good option. And so I contacted several different agencies to find the one that fit best with me. And I am using an agency in Willow, Alaska, who has chosen the dog based on the personality and the ability to do the job that I need done. And has been training the dog. The dog is now about 2 years old and is nearly completely trained.
Mm-hmm.
She will be coming to Juneau in May, spend a couple months here, and I'll be working with her at that point. And then she'll go back to Willow to finish the training after it's determined what needs we still have with her.
Mm-hmm. And then for you to qualify for a service dog, is it just as you just need your doctor to make the recommendation? How does that part of it work? Is it easy? Is it hard?
It's not too difficult. It's a lot of paperwork and that mm-hmm. type of thing. You had to get approval from your doctor stating that, you know, you do have a disability and the dog would be beneficial. Then you apply to the agency, and depending on how you know, many people they have currently that they're training, that will determine the length of time that you're waiting. And also how quickly they can find a dog that meets your needs. There's different needs, you know, for mobility dog. Obviously, you need a larger dog than you would if it was, like, maybe a dog that to help you with hearing something.
Mm-hmm.
So different needs and the different abilities of the dog.
So you'll meet this dog for the first time coming up soon.
Actually, I met her. We have gone up to Willow and worked with her,
mm-hmm.
and kind of see how our personalities meshed and if she seemed to be a good fit, and things worked out really nicely. So she is a 2-year-old Newfoundland, and like I said, then she will come here then in May.
Well, I'm sure you're eager to see this next chapter in your life come together, and this fundraising event, I'm assuming, is an important one for you. So
right, there's quite a bit of cost involved in the obtaining the dog. First, the purchasing of the dog and the ongoing training, and a lot of equipment. So there's been a constant mm-hmm. need for funds, and that's why. We are doing the fundraiser at the Moose Lodge.
Well, why don't you just review the fundraiser and the details one more time, and then we'll move along.
Okay. Again, it's Saturday evening from 5 to 7 at the Moose Lodge on Airport Boulevard. It's $10 in advance, $12 at the door, and children are $6.
Norm, I promised I would ask you at least once if you had anything to add.
Well, I just want to will be entertainment available, as Kevin said. The entertainers are local people. Some of whom we heard at Folk Fest this last week, and their names are.
Okay, Mark Hurd is going to be playing, as well as Mike Truax, and then we're also having Joy Johnston and Holly Burbank.
Very good. Well, good luck with the fundraiser. Good luck with the service dog.
Thank you very much.
So, Kim and Norm Haskell, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
On top of spaghetti.
On top of spaghetti.
All covered with cheese.
All covered with cheese.
I lost my poor meatball.
I lost my poor meatball.
When somebody sneezed.
When somebody sneezed.
It rolled off the table. Back to me. On top of spaghetti.
On top of spaghetti.
All covered with cheese.
All covered with cheese.
I lost my poor meatball.
I lost my poor meatball.
When somebody sneezed.
When somebody sneezed.
It rolled off the table.
It rolled off the table.
And onto the floor.
And onto the floor.
And then my poor meatball. Door. It rolled in the garden.
It rolled in the garden.
And under a bush.
And under a bush.
And then my poor meatball.
And then my poor meatball.
Was nothing but mush.
Was nothing but mush.
Oh, the mush was as tasty.
Oh, the mush was as tasty.
As tasty could be.
As tasty could be.
And early next summer. It grew into a tree.
It grew into a tree.
Well, the tree was all covered.
The tree was all covered.
With beautiful moss.
With beautiful moss.
It grew lovely meatballs.
It grew lovely meatballs.
And tomato sauce.
And tomato sauce.
So if you eat spaghetti.
So if you eat spaghetti.
All covered with cheese.
All covered with cheese.
Hold on to your meatballs.
And I'd like to welcome into the studio Pat Race, and Pat's going to update us on two events here, or I think it's just two. There's the Downtown Spring Cleanup event,
mm-hmm.
and the other one perhaps is not an event, but it's information about a group called the Downtown Improvement Group. So take it away.
All right, yeah. So about I guess it was about last year at this time, Bruce Denton and I got together and made a little short film kind of about some of the things downtown that we'd have that we had observed and wanted to like fix and make better. And a lot of basically what that turned into is just a long ongoing conversation with downtown business owners and community members and politicians, neighborhood associations, just folks that have a stake in downtown Juneau. And we kind of have I guess we look at downtown Juneau as kind of the front door of our community. It's where it's what people see when they arrive here, and it's where we want to put our best foot forward. And so so what we want to do is try and make it a nicer place, and that's where the very simple idea of a downtown cleanup day came from. And so we're doing a lot more complicated things, working with big social issues. There's the one project that's kind of spun off of what we began is the idea of this permanent supportive housing unit, and that's been getting a lot of traction. But this is just a let's get together and pick up some garbage kind of event. Let's knock some moss off the buildings and shake some of the cigarette butts out of the cracks and crannies.
And is this, I mean, you know, every year, every spring, groups go out and clean up different parts of Juneau.
Yeah.
Is this the part of that program, or is this just kind of a downtown specific group that's saying let's do this annually or a couple times a year?
Yeah, we're a really informal organization, and we've basically just said let's do this, and we've got some city support and we've got business support. There's going to be some snacks out there. I guess I should talk about when and where it is.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is going to happen on Friday, this Friday, April 17th, from 8 a.m. to noon. And we'll get together at Pocket Park, and the supplies will be available. There will be, you know, rakes or pickaxes, whatever you need to get at the garbage that's downtown. We're going to break up into small groups and try and clean up different areas of downtown. If you're interested in having a little more involved role as a volunteer, you can get a hold of Bruce Denton, and you can basically head up a crew, and you'll be assigned kind of an area of downtown, or you can just show up and say hey, I'm ready to do what you need me to do, and you'll be handed a broom or a shovel or something and be sent after a specific.
So do you have, I've defined downtown in this case, do you have specific areas that are priorities that you know you really want to?
It's a little bit loose. I think that if you have an area that you want to, last time we did a cleanup project, I think it was last fall, and I spent most of the day underneath the Emporium building, in an alleyway where a lot of garbage gets thrown, a lot of tin cans and things like that, cigarette butts. And I was just, shoveling it out into bags. And so I took that on because that was an area that was near my business and that I wanted to look a little nicer. And I think that, some people are focusing on their buildings or their area, and some people are just kind of wandering around and focusing on particular things that bother them, like chickweed or sidewalks or cigarette butts. So it's really just, whatever you're passionate about and bothers you about downtown Juneau. If you don't want to see dog poop on the sidewalk, then go around and spend a day and knock it out.
So that's this Friday from 8 a.m. to noon.
Yep.
And people, you said, could either just show up at Pocket Park with what they think they need, and you'll also provide...
Supplies will be provided. So you actually could just show up with, some reasonable clothing. Mm-hmm. There's going to be gloves and shovels and things like that.
And if somebody's interested in learning a little bit more and planning a little bit more in advance about specific areas to clean up, do they contact you?
Or? They can get a hold of Bruce Denton or Samantha Dye, and they can reach them through the Senate building.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got just a minute here. Any more about the group itself? Here's one event that you're doing.
Yeah.
Is there another event coming up, or how do people learn more about the group?
The best way is, again, the Senate building has kind of been the hub for this, tapping into Samantha Dye, who she does our newsletter. And we generally meet on Fridays in the morning. It's kind of a slow time for most of the downtown business owners, and we have talked about all kinds of different events. We've had the city come in and talk to us about sign ordinances and parking, and we have the cops have come in and talked to us about some of the issues that they face. And it's been a really good connection point, because a lot of people have a quick solution to a problem, but they don't necessarily realize I guess, the full extent of, like, the bird's eye view of that problem. So when we identify something that's like, we need to eliminate the glory hole from downtown, then we bring the glory hole to come in and talk about, like, what it's like from their perspective. And it's like, oh, well, maybe it's a little more complicated than that. And so so it's just a I think, I guess if I was to sum up our goal, it is to increase communication between stakeholders in the downtown area.
Okay. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah.
Opportunity for people to join the group this week, this Friday, from 8 to noon at Pocket Park.
Yeah.
And good luck with the cleanup. I hope you get good weather.
Yeah, good weather
would
be
great.
But, you know, rain helps with cleanup.
In this town, you know. Yeah. Thank you for coming in.
All right, thank you.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown. When you've got worries, all the noise and the hurry seems to help, I know. Downtown, just listen to the music of the traffic in the city. Linger on the sidewalk where the neon signs are pretty. How can you lose? The lights are much brighter there. You can't forget all your troubles, forget all your cares, so go downtown. Things will be great when you're downtown. No final place for sure, downtown. Everything's waiting for you. Downtown. Don't hang around and let your problems surround you. There are movie shows downtown. Maybe you know some little places to go to where they never close. Downtown, just listen to the rhythm of a gentle bossa nova. You'll be dancing with them too before the night is over. Happy again. The lights are much brighter there. You can't forget all your troubles, forget all your cares, so go downtown, where all the lights are bright, downtown, waiting for you tonight, downtown, you're gonna be alright now, downtown,
Welcome to the studio to Richard Ringel and Brian Crowder. They're both here to talk about the, let's see, it's coming this weekend. We've got Perseverance Theater and UAS joining ranks and presenting Anton Chekhov's The Sneeze.
That's right.
Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
So that's Friday, Saturday, Sunday this weekend out at the UAS campus at the theater in Hendrickson at 7:30 p.m. So we'll kind of repeat that information later, but... Mm-hmm. So I don't know who wants to start, but tell us about the play. Let's start with the most obvious thing. What is it, and why should people come? And
okay. Well, Richard, go ahead. I'm going to mention everybody's names and give credit at the end. So go ahead.
Richard, you're on.
So The Sneeze is a conglomeration of 8 short plays and stories by Anton Chekhov. The reason we chose this is because we've been doing a lot of contemporary things with The Marriage of Bette and Boo, Little Murders, was it?
Little Murders, Lend Me a Tenor. Yeah, more contemporary plays.
And so we wanted to try something a little different, something classic, but not, like, archaic. So The Sneeze, being the writings of Anton Chekhov, was... translated by Michael Frayn. He's the guy who did Noises Off. So he took these 8 short plays and 8 short stories and conglomerated them into one 8-act play. And so it's a comedy. It's really fun. And
it's very much in the style of vaudeville. It's very it hinges. It's right on that precipice of farcical sort of attitude. But Chekhov was, you know, the lead in bringing modernism to theater, and so it's got this very real feel to it as well. And there's a lot of depth to his pieces in these 8 different short stories, and they all go together, and they all have this through line, and it's just a very appropriate piece for Juno. It's got this kind of dreary vibe to it, this sort of wallpaper that feels like it could come crumbling off the wall at any point. Just this little kind of these facades that everything's okay, but it might come down at any moment all around you, and so it's a very temperamental piece. So yeah.
And it's a comedy.
Yes, and it's a comedy.
And we all need a good laugh every now and then. So that's a good reason. Now are you both in the play?
Yes, we're both members of the UAS Theater Play Production class, which is what's facilitating this with the help of Perseverance. It's not your standard play where everyone has a single defined role. It's an episodic play, so each different scene has different characters. And so we all have 3 at least parts per se,
and it's 6 people are in the class. It's me, myself, Richard, Miranda Clark, Jessica Cotty, Felix T.A., Zebediah Bodine, and that's all 6 of us. And it's directed by Christina Apathy. And we got tons of support from Perseverance Theater, from Shona Strouser, the educational director at Perseverance. Eric Chadwell was our set builder, and he did a fantastic job. The set's looking great. Jason Ginter helped with lighting technician, and we had also some help from the interns at Perseverance, Julie O'Connor, and it's just been it's been great. Austin Tagabon is stage managing, and Melissa Arnold is also helping with sound. She's a student at UAS, and so we have a really good collaboration of people and artists who've been putting in lots of hours. Trying to, just excited to be around this last and final production that's going to be taking place at UAS before the stage is demolished or reappropriated or whatever's happening to it, but it's going away.
So this is a part of the curriculum, right? I mean,
yes.
So you mentioned the class is 6. Are there 6 people in the class this mm-hmm. year? And mm-hmm. so you've done a series of productions, and this is in partnership with Perseverance Theater.
Yes. Yeah.
So tell me more about that. How new is this? How does it work?
Well, to my knowledge, we've had theater classes in the past, but as UAS differed from its had different budget issues, stopped being able to hire theater teachers. They reached out to Perseverance because Perseverance has a bunch of talent in the acting field. So all the theater classes I've taken have been with people from Perseverance, mostly Shona. This is the first class I've taken with Christina. I took directing with Boston Christopher. Before that, I don't really know.
So in effect, they're the faculty. I mean,
they're the teachers.
The UAS provides the venue, the program, and they become the faculty. And then, but Brian, you mentioned other people, stage managers, mm-hmm. different roles. Are they a part of the class, or are they a part?
No, they're people from the outside. We have a budget mm-hmm. going into the class, and we are able to designate certain amounts of money for certain things. Oh, I forgot to mention Valerie Snyder from Brown Boots Costume Company helped with the costuming, basically we're able to use Perseverance's resources that they have at their disposal, and they're great about letting us have access to that and feel what it's like to put on a production and what it requires and all the different things that go into a production, and it's quite harrowing at times. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're like, oh my gosh, we have to do this, get on. There's just a million and one things that you don't really, when you go to a play and you watch it and you just appreciate what's in front of you for what it is, as opposed to thinking about what goes into that. And so I think all I can say, speaking on all of our behalves, we've all have a newfound appreciation for what it takes to put on a play, and it's great. It's a great process. It's been the most fun 4 years of my life doing this, and it's sad that that people won't be getting the opportunity to do that any longer after the semester. I'm really happy for the chance that I've gotten out of the university and what they've been able to do for me. So it's been great.
And in turn, of course, Perseverance is developing local talent for their, you know, for the theater world here in Juneau, which, and I'm sure there's benefit for them as well, just being the faculty, if you will. So, just real briefly, Brian, you just came to acting, I believe. Is that true? Or I mean, in other words, you were not doing this as a kid growing up?
Just a couple years ago, yeah.
A couple years ago. Come to it. And Richard, you have a history that goes back into JDHS.
Yeah, no, when I was in JDHS, I was in Les Miserables, Jekyll and Hyde. Didn't get into it until my junior year, but I did my best, and I enjoyed it a lot. But when I got into UAS, I was focusing more on academic stuff. I took an acting class, but after that, there wasn't really much else. I didn't hear about the first theater play production until it was already happening, and then the next year I got into it, and so that got me back into the theater vibe theme.
So we're coming to the end of our time. Maybe just both of you just give a good, compelling reason to an audience out there for why they would come, why they should come, what they're going to enjoy about the performance this weekend.
Well, from my side, it's a very fun play, as we've said. It's vaudeville-y. I don't know if that's a word, but I'm going to use it. And it's fun. Lots of big characters, lots of characters to connect with. The language is fun. It's a little bit old, but it's you're still able to connect to it. It's been adapted and translated for us, and so it's just, if you want to have a good time this weekend, come watch The Sneeze, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 7:30 p.m. at UAS, Hendrickson Building, room 113. It's directed by Christina Apathy, and she did a fantastic job. She's a pleasure to work with, and all of us have loved being under her tutelage, so it's been great.
As coming from a student perspective, it's a great way to spend an evening. It's also kind of cheap. Tickets are going to be $5 for students, and that will include students from the public school system, and $10 general admission. So it's, I've been in it for the entire semester, and I still laugh. I still laugh every time I see everyone up on stage. I sometimes laugh when I'm on stage. I'm trying to work on that because I can't be doing that. But if you want some laughs, if you want something fun to do on a Friday, Saturday, or even a Sunday evening, come see us.
Well, very good. Good luck with the performances this weekend. Thank you for making this entertainment available to Junoites. And Richard Ringel and Brian Crowder, good to see you both. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 15th of April, 2015. It's the birthday of Henry James, author of 20 novels, 112 stories, 12 plays, and several books of travel and criticism. Born in New York City, 1843. Father was a friend of Thoreau, Emerson, Hawthorne. Family traveled throughout Europe. When Henry James was in his 20s and writing short stories, he moved to Europe because he could live cheaply there. And he fell in love with England. He wrote, "The capital of the human race happens to be British." What he really wanted to be, though, was a dramatist. But one of his plays was poorly received, and James himself was booed on opening night, and that discouraged him. He never earned much money from his writing, nor did he win the acclaim that he had hoped for. His friend Edith Wharton lobbied for him to win the Nobel Prize, to no avail. And towards the end of his life, James got a generous advance from Scribner's for a new book, an advance that actually secretly came from Edith Wharton. It was on this day, 1802, William Wordsworth and his sister Dorothy were walking along the banks of Ullswater Lake, 9 miles long in the Lake District, and they happened upon a profusion of daffodils. Dorothy wrote down a description of the daffodils, and Wordsworth wrote the poem 5 years later that begins, "I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high o'er vales and hills when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils beside the lake beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze. It's the birthday of Leonardo da Vinci, born Leonardo di Ser Piero da Vinci in Vinci, Italy, 1452, best known for his Mona Lisa and The Last Supper, two of the most famous paintings in the world, but he left fewer than 30 paintings when he died, and most of those were unfinished. He was a perfectionist and a procrastinator. Having worked on the Mona Lisa on and off for the last 15 years of his life, he was drawing up plans for inventions like the submarine, the helicopter, the armored tank, and the alarm clock, none of which came to fruition in his life. Here's a poem for today by Tony Hoagland entitled Disappointment. I was feeling pretty religious, standing on the bridge in my winter coat, looking down at the gray water, the sharp little waves dusted with snow, fish in their tin armor. That's what I like about disappointment, the way it slows you down when the querulous, insistent chatter of desire goes dead calm and the minor roadside flowers pronounce their quiet colors and the red dirt of the hillside glows. She played the flute, he played the fiddle, and the moon came up over the barn. Then he didn't get the job, or her father died before she told him that one most important thing, and everything got still. It was February or October. It was July. I remember it so clear. You don't have to pursue anything ever again. It's over. You're free. You're unemployed. You just have to stand there, looking out on the water, in your trench coat of solitude, with your scarf of resignation lifting in the wind. A poem by Tony Hoagland, Disappointment, from What Narcissism Means to Me, published by Grey Wolf Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. Throughout the month of April, their favorite poem project, Florida, invites Floridians to submit their favorite poem. Florida-based listeners can submit their nominations at poetryfoundation.org/favoritepoemflorida. And by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And I'd like to welcome into the studio Jim Clark with the Juneau World Affairs Council and this evening's presenter, who is Rick Caulfield, UAS Provost, is going to be presenting this evening, 5 o'clock, right here at KTOO downstairs in the studio, right after work. Swing on by K2 and catch the presentation. The topic is, the title is Greenland and the Changing Arctic, Climate, Culture, and Self-Determination. Rick Caulfield, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Jim, good to see you back in the studio.
Thank you.
So I realize tonight you've got certain things you're going to talk about, and we'll tease a little bit on that for the audience in a moment. But when I first thought about chatting with you, I just thought Greenland. I mean, this place. And I'm curious if you could just give people a brief sketch of what Greenland is, where it is, what it's like there.
Sure. No, I'm happy to do that, and I really appreciate this opportunity. Greenland's a fascinating place. It's in the North Atlantic. It's the world's largest island. It's 85% covered by ice, but it's also a homeland. It's a homeland for about 60,000 people, predominantly Inuit people, who live there, and people have inhabited Greenland for over 4,000 years. So when people think about Greenland, they may think about a vast and desolate landscape that they see looking out their window in an airplane flying between Anchorage and Europe. They may think about issues of climate change. Certainly Greenland's been in the news a lot because of that. But I guess I'm really hoping to put a human face on Greenland and how Greenlanders, the Greenlandic Inuit people, are responding to the challenges of the world they face today. They're very much rooted in a traditional way of life of hunting and fishing, much as we see in Inuit communities here in Alaska and in northern Canada. But at the same time, their economy is very much tied to the world economy, exports of fish, for example, and minerals. And so at the same time, their way of life is being impacted tremendously by warming temperatures around the world. So they face a real conundrum of how to hold on to the things that are dear to their way of life, indigenous traditions, their language, and yet also live very much in the present and with an eye on the future. And so really that's what the talk tonight at 5 o'clock is about, is how do 60,000 people living on a rocky coast in Greenland navigate that terrain.
So how did Greenland become an area of expertise for you? You've obviously got an academic resume here and now as provost, but somewhere along the line, I mean, what's the story behind Greenland for you?
Well, one of the things that brought me to Alaska now 40 years ago was a fascination about the interface between human societies and the natural environment, and what better place than Alaska to look at those opportunities and the challenges. And I decided to go back and work on a graduate degree at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. This was quite a number of years ago. And then ended up working with the Department of Fish and Game in small remote communities in the interior of Alaska and in northern Alaska. And so I had an opportunity to experience Native cultures up close and see the dramatic changes that were taking place. Just small villages where electricity was coming in for the very first time. There was no television. There might have been one telephone, that sort of thing. And so it was fascinating to me to first of all, meet elders who were over 100 years old, who were born in a skin tent and remembered well what life was like long before Western civilization showed up on the horizon, and yet how people were coping with all those changes. And so when I had an opportunity to go back and do graduate work as a PhD student, I chose to go to the United Kingdom, and I did a degree in the UK. And along the way, I met a Greenlander, a gentleman by the name of Finn Lunga, who came from a very distinguished Greenlandic political family. And I told him of my interest in doing doctoral research in small rural communities. And at one point I was thinking I might go to Southern Asia or to Africa to do that research. My wife liked the idea of going from a warm place rather than a cold one, going to a warm place rather than a cold one. But Finn Lunga opened the door for me to do work in Greenland. The Greenland Home Rule government was being challenged on the question of Aboriginal subsistence whaling. And so my doctoral research really was on Inuit whaling in Greenland. Greenlanders take whales under the International Whaling Commission quota regime as Aboriginal subsistence whalers. And as you can appreciate, it's a very controversial topic. And so it was a perfect topic for a doctoral dissertation to understand the realities of hunters living in very small, remote communities, wanting to feed their families, wanting to maintain their cultural traditions, and yet being criticized at the international level through the International Whaling Commission. And so it was a perfect topic to really explore. What are the issues of indigenous rights and cultures and traditions? What are the issues of conservation of great whales? What are the issues of managing renewable resources in a rapidly changing environment? So that ended up being my PhD. It ended up being a book. It's called Greenlanders, Whales, and Whaling, Sustainability and Self-Determination in the North. And from there, a lot of opportunities opened up. I went back to Greenland a number of different times and continued working on the nature of small economies in Greenland and the changes that Greenlanders were taking. One of the biggest challenges, though, for me personally, I will say, is to work effectively in Greenland, I really needed to work on the languages that were appropriate to doing research there. And the colonial language is Danish. Greenland is a part of the Danish realm, and this is something I'll talk about tonight. Greenlanders have what's called self-rule within the Danish realm. So they have a fair amount of control over their domestic lives, but the Danish government continues to control foreign policy and monetary policy. But the Greenlandic Inuit language. It's called Kalastasut. I spent a lot of time learning Danish, and I spent a lot of time learning Kalastasut, which is much like Yupik or Inupiaq. And in the end, that was a tremendous challenge because I think at the time I was about 38 years old, and I wondered if the gray matter was still capable of taking on that challenge. But it turned out to be an immensely...
You were worried about that at 38?
I was. I was a young man. And but it turned out to be one of the most rewarding aspects to really, as you do any time you learn a language, you really have an entree into a way of life and a way of thinking about the world. So anyway, I'm really excited to have a chance to share this tonight at 5 o'clock at the K2 studio downstairs, and look forward, hopefully people will be able to join us for that presentation.
So just with a minute or so here to go, tonight, people who come tonight, they're going to, you know, you've got a very current, present kind of view of the dynamic world of Greenland. And what would a few highlights be that you'd be talking about tonight?
Well, I think one of the things is a comparison with Alaska. Greenlanders, as they say, are rooted in their own traditions. They're very proud of their language, their cultural heritage as Inuit people. But they're very much living in the present. And self-rule government within the Danish realm has them looking towards independence. They would like to be an independent country. In fact, there was a vote just a few years back where 75% of the voters in Greenland said, we'd like to become an independent Inuit country. But to do that, it means shifting away, from many of the traditional practices of hunting and fishing, not entirely, but to a significant degree, and to move into mining and oil and gas development. And so some of the more interesting things to me is how Greenlanders are navigating this terrain of holding on to what's dear to them and yet at the same time moving into realms that would prospectively give them the resources to be successful as an independent indigenous country.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be a fascinating topic. I realize you're going to weave in climate change and the economy, and there's a bunch of levels to this, but
right.
I think you've done a good job of summarizing it for people. Before we go, Jim, do you want to add anything about the JWAC schedule, what's going on?
Well, first, we invite everybody to come tonight. We're very, very pleased to have the topic of Greenland. I've been pushing Rick for a long time to do it because I think it would be fascinating for people. But the Juneau World Affairs Council meetings are free, and these presentations are free, and we're a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization, and we're hoping to see a large turnout tonight for this, what will be this very interesting talk. And thank you for having us.
And Rick, anything else that you wanted to say during the interview that you didn't get to?
No, just thanks for the opportunity, and I hope people will join us at 5 o'clock tonight.
Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. It's been raining hard for hours, but at last, the mid-April sky begins to clear. We can almost see the Gulf of Mexico from where we're standing, a quarter mile from the Texas coast, at the edge of a stand of oak trees. The rain has finally stopped, but now something else descends from the sky. Birds. Hundreds, thousands of birds. Rose-breasted grosbeaks. Orchard orioles, painted buntings, warblers, flock after flock, they alight in trees and shrubs, sparkling indigo buntings perch alongside velvety scarlet tanagers. We are experiencing what birders call a fallout, one of the great spectacles of bird migration. The legions of birds dropping from the sky have flown nonstop across the Gulf, covering 600 miles in about 15 hours. Exhausted and hungry from bucking the storm, they land at last in tree-filled sanctuaries near the town of High Island, Texas. The birds will refuel and then fly north to breeding grounds across the continent. Isn't it lucky for the birds that people have conserved habitat for these famished and weary travelers? For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. J
Join friends and neighbors for the annual Empty Bowls benefit at Centennial Hall on Sunday, April 26th from 5 to 7 p.m. Empty Bowls, a fundraiser for the Glory Hole, features delicious all-you-can-eat soups from your favorite local restaurants, fresh-baked cookies, live music, a silent auction, the always-fun dessert auction, and beautiful bowls from local artisans. Tickets are available at both Hearthside Books locations and at the door. This message brought to you by the Glory Hole. Support for this station comes from Alaska Canopy Tours, offering canopy and zipline tours. More information at alaskacanopy.com.
And I'd like to welcome into the studio three members of Juno Lyric Opera, Scarlett Adam, John Clow, and Christine or Kristen?
Kristen.
Kristen. Kristen Miller. Welcome, all three of you.
Hey, Jamie.
Thank you. Hi there.
Always fun to have Juno Lyric Opera people in the studio. And you've got your big annual, I think it's annual, right?
Our eighth annual gala coming up. That's right.
Tell us about the eighth annual gala.
Scarlett, tell them about the eighth annual gala.
Oh, well, it's all we're thinking about right now. It's on Friday night, the 17th, at Centennial Hall. The doors are going to open at 5:30, and we are kicking off our 40th season that evening. So it's we're very excited. It's going to be a wonderful night. Lots of singing and food and wine and desserts and a few terrific auction items. It is not to be missed.
Yeah, our goal with our galas has been to have fun, and I think we've had a pretty good track record of doing that. We're going to have some marvelous Mediterranean and French and South American wines available for wine tasting, because that's part of our Spanish theme for this year, because we've got the upcoming opera of Don Giovanni coming up, which Kristen's going to talk to you about in just a moment. So it's a Spanish theme. We're having complimentary tapas, wine tasting. There's an open bar, so lots of food, lots of drink, and then somewhere around 7:15, we'll start singing a few songs for you too.
And this is a fundraiser, obviously.
This is a fundraiser for Juno Lyric Opera.
Is this your big one of the year, or one of many, or
one of our two big ones for the year? Really, we do the Divas event in September, which is pretty popular. Who's your diva? Mm-hmm. But this is our spring gala where we try and raise the money to help us get through the first half of the year.
And is this a formal event? What's the attire?
This is a wonderful excuse to dig out your spiffy duds and get dressed up and, you know, visit Shoefly and buy some shoes, get your hair done, and come out and have a great time. However, it's Juno, so if you want to come in jeans and a sweater and your extra tufts, we will welcome you anyway.
So people who come, Friday
at Centennial Hall.
7 o'clock, doors open at 5:30.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the actual singing is after 7
sometime.
Probably start
between 7 and 7:15, yeah.
So for people who come, give me a sense of what's the fun here. It sounds like, I said, the food sounds great and everything else, and the singing, I can only imagine contributes to the fun. And
well, when you arrive, the wine tasting will be going on, and we have two different folks in town who will be offering these terrific wines. So we welcome you to try them and experience them. And the tapas bar is going to be from the Rockwell, and Deb's put together a great menu for us. And when you check in, we have kind of a little bit of a surprise, so I don't want to give that away. But, yeah, and actually before the singing starts, the Tango Juno group is going to come that night as well. They're all going to come and for a little while stand up and do some tango. And if anybody in Juno likes to tango, this is your chance to get on the floor and join in. Or if you just want to watch, it's a beautiful dance to watch.
Sounds like fun.
It has been fun. We're pretty proud of the fact that the folks that have come to these in the past have almost uniformly enjoyed themselves and had a good time, and that's our goal at these events. It really is. And we're going to be having our dessert auction. I can tell you, Scarlett has scrounged up and begged, barred, and pleaded for about a dozen or more of some of the most wonderful desserts you could imagine. Some really nice ones we're going to be having up there. And Alaska Airlines has placed a couple tickets for us. Wings Airways has placed some tickets for us, and a couple other nice auction items as well. So it should be some fun things to do.
40th anniversary season. There's a bunch of remarkable cultural institutions in the capital city that have just in the last few years have all been hitting their 40th anniversary. So congratulations on
Thank you.
It's a tribute to the community and all the people that make it work.
Absolutely.
One of the results, of course, are the productions. And Don Giovanni is coming up next. So Kristen, tell us more.
Sure. So Don Giovanni is actually the following weekend, April 24th and 25th.
We're performing at the Jack, and we've secured Salt to be our beer, wine, and champagne vendor. Doors will open for spirits, for wine and beer and champagne at 6, and feel free to come early. We'll have cookies. We'll have snacks available for purchase. Then you spill into the hall, and we have a pretty amazing show put together. We've got a couple of local singers. We've got Mark Calvert, who sang internationally in Europe for years and then retired, and we've dragged him out of retirement to sing here with us as Don Ottavio. We've got Dr. David Miller, who also happens to be my husband, playing Leporello. We've got Roberto Perlez Gomez from Los Angeles playing our Don Giovanni. Paul Shipper from New York City is our director playing the Commendatore. We've got two lovely sopranos from Seattle, Alexa Jarvis and Tess Altaveros playing Elvira and Donna Anna. We've got a wonderful singer named Brody Del Baccaro from Baltimore playing our Mazzetto. It's pretty amazing. If you go on our website and look at the – oh, and then Rhiannon and Gwevin, not to be missed, from Sitka, mm-hmm. playing our Zerlina, also incredible singer. And they are all arriving in Juneau within the next 48 hours, most of them staying either at my house or at John Clow's house, so we're doing a lot of shuffling. But they've all agreed to be part of our gala and to perform for us. And you're just not going to believe the quality of singing we've got going. It's really amazing.
Very and for anybody that might not remember, Don Giovanni was, of course, Italian for Don Juan. This is the Don Juan story about the greatest lover of all time, at least in his own mind, and he has some numbers to back up that claim. So this is sort of the story of what he did, how he did it, and what happened to him as a result. It's a great show.
So to all three of you, as for someone who maybe has not been to opera here in Juneau, the gala, Don Giovanni, a hook for someone to come out and try it for the first time.
Sure, and I'm glad you asked that question. What we've been doing, and I was just thinking about this morning, in honor of JLO's 30th anniversary, 10 years ago, we did The Barber of Seville, and it was the first time we ever did an opera in its original language, in Italian, with super titles projected over the stage. And what's so nice is that you can follow along, listen to the beautiful music as it was intended, and also know exactly what's happening when you look up and you read the words. So we have Sean Stendevad has been doing our titles for us for the last several productions. She's incredible. So you not only can follow exactly what's happening, but Paul Shipper has put together an incredibly contemporary, fun, dynamic show for us. It's not stale. It's not stale opera in any way, shape, or form. It's set in modern times. The costumes are modern. The staging is fun. I mean, it's just not people standing on stage and singing. These are performers who will make you laugh and cry and all of your emotions. There's fog machines. There's all kinds of fun stuff. So it's an event. It's more than your standard little concert.
And I don't think it's something that Juno has seen before with this kind of production. It's going to be very exciting. And it's Mozart. You cannot beat Mozart. So.
And as she said, it's a truly star-studded cast. You're going to hear not only some of the best voices in Southeast Alaska, but some of the best voices in the United States of America. This cast that Paul and Kristen have put together is outstanding.
And not to leave Todd Hunt out. I mean, Todd is conducting and our music director, and what he's able to do with his orchestra that he assembles is really incredible.
Yeah. Kristen, you probably mentioned it, and maybe I missed it, your role in this.
Producer.
You are the producer.
I will not sing.
She's doing everything.
Did she say it before and I missed it? I wanted to make sure.
But it bears repeating.
Okay.
I have sung, but I can't compete with these folks. So.
Well, very good. So that's next week.
Correct. So next Friday and Saturday, the 24th and 25th at the Jack. And then the following weekend, we put everybody on the ferry and we go over to Sitka and we perform at the Sitka Performing Arts Center. And that's the third time that we've done this. JLO has done this. We did it with Tosca, we did it with The Marriage of Figaro, and now this. So it's a lot of fun, and it's always well-received over there.
Well, very good. So good luck with the performances coming up.
Thank you.
Real quickly again, quick recap on the gala coming up, just the
Friday
details.
Friday night, doors open at 5:30, wine tasting, complimentary tapas, lots of fun. The singing, the show starts about 7. Be there. It's going to be a nice night, Centennial Hall.
All right. Thank you, all three of you, for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jamie.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay.